turn it over to Dallas. Who do we have today?
Ken Murphy with the Office of Emergency Management is here to talk to us about emergency communication issues. Again, this was at the request of one of the committee members, and here the issue is probably what we have in the way of emergency communications and what we don't have as far as interoperability and the like. And that's been an issue of concern to the legislature, and Ken is here. He's heavily involved with this. He's with the Office of Emergency Management, but also one of his, I think, key responsibilities is the interoperability issue.
Anytime you're ready, we're ready.
Good day, sir. For the record, my name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management and also Deputy Director of Oregon's Office of Homeland Security. And I also sit on the State Interoperability Executive Council. I first wanted to just really cover what we do have right now if our normal communication systems failed. And I think I would define as normal as what we consider to be the telephone and probably cell phones in that, both hardline and cell phone communications. You know, if the public switch went down for whatever reason, whether it be by natural causes or somebody with a backhoe, you know, that could cause problems. And the different systems that I'm going to describe here really apply to any type of situation that we do have available for any type of disaster, or if we needed communications, just period, if the public switch went down for whatever reason. First of all, I just want to talk basic on the handout that I provided you. We do have the Federal Emergency Management System's National Radio System. This does allow us communications across the nation, and then it does provide us a high-frequency voice capability to our jurisdictions, both voice and digital, because of the need to send data. There's becoming an increasing need that not only is voice important, but data to send back and forth between elements. So we have that capability throughout the system and that we use. Probably the second most robust capability that we have in the state is the amateur radio network. Oregon, I think, is very lucky. We have a lot of dedicated citizens, you know, that amateur radio is not only a profession but a passion. And we have a coordinator in my office that helps coordinate the volunteers across the state. We approximately have about 1,300 registered. And we have those set up so that we have those into the emergency operations centers at the county level, and then, of course, at my office at the state level. And then we have many amateur radio people that are mobile in their cars or trucks that we have used, you know, on a mobile capacity to be able to move from point A to point B and provide information. And also in the amateur radio system, you can also not only voice, but it does have the capability of sending data. I think a lot of people sometimes don't realize that you can send data over the amateur radio system. So, again, a very robust system in Oregon, and they are very well versed in practice all the time. We have two or three annual events where the amateur radio community comes together, and we put them through their paces, and they participate with us in many different exercises just to keep their system proficient. Another service, the third item on the list there in front of you, is called the Oregon Emergency Services System. It is a system of VHF low-band capabilities. As you can see, it's really not robust throughout the entire state, but it does cover most of the traditional geographic Willamette Valley and North Oregon coast. As monies become available, we slowly try and increase that capability and where it reaches to. And that is housed in our offices and then into the emergency operations centers in those jurisdictions. Number four, satellite phones. Obviously, you know, a fairly convenient device, but expensive. We have a fixed satellite system in our office, and then we have mobile satellite phones that we can use. And again, as money becomes available, we try and at least get those down to the county level where we have that capability. Number five, various public safety systems. I wanted to put that in there because I try and look at it in the emergency management industry that a police car or fire truck is a mobile communications device. And we have used them many, many times when roads or bridges or things are inaccessible, that we can put a police vehicle or a fire truck into a location to at least establish some base communications using their systems that either we're part of or we can patch into using the state's microwave system that's shared between the Oregon State Police and then ODOT's Department of Transportation system. So we do have that capability, you know, to be able to use those vehicles and the radio systems that they have in them. And also, as each police department, especially some fire departments, but more police, having the mobile data terminals in their cars, that then gives us the ability also to provide data and digital information over a computer network. Number six, the Oregon National Guard. The National Guard, they have a system, HF system, throughout their National Guard armory facilities throughout the state that we can use as a communications device. And then both in the Army and Air National Guard of Oregon, they have various portable systems that are either drivable across the road or air transportable to be able to move into a place if you can't get to it through normal transportation methods. And the Air National Guard has some very high-tech stuff that really is a platform of equipment that provides both telephone, computer, telephone lines, and various methods of being able to tap into a fair amount of VHF, HF frequencies, current 800 megahertz systems that may be in certain cities or different systems. So it's really a truck-mounted system with many capabilities that can be moved into different locations to provide emergency communications. And then the Army National Guard, again, we use their communications capability, although not quite as highly technical as the Air Guard. Again, they have the ability, most all of their vehicles have radios in them, and again, we can use those type of entities to be able to move communications around to different locations to establish communications. Number seven, contracting with service providers, a very realistic thing that we have to look at, and we've studied all the different vendors that are out there, and in times of crisis and emergency, your normal telephone companies, the Quest, the Verizons, those type of people, they do have mobile van or truck-mounted systems that will at least try and reestablish telephone service into an area that we can contract to bring into an area. And there are also other service providers that you can contract you know, to bring basic communications back in until the infrastructure is repaired. And number eight, I wanted to bring up, we are doing some limited testing on that now, and it's really trying to look at how we can use that to ensure communications. So far, history has proven, or at least provided us some statistical data that, you know, the Internet has been up and running and continue to run long after the telephone switch and those kind of things have failed and cell phones are clogging up the air and they don't work. And so we've got some systems set up in our office, and we're testing with some coastal counties right now, you know, warning systems, voice over the internet protocols, and being able to literally use your laptop or PDA, personal data device, as a telephone and a data transmission device to use the internet for those communication systems. So those are the key things that I have at my disposal at this point in time, and I would like to add to that a good percentage of these items, with a few exceptions, we always forget in a lot of cases, you know, if the public's telephone switch is down or there's some sort of catastrophe, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that where these systems are placed, are there generators to run the facilities that might power the different telephones or the HF or VHF or amateur radio systems that are not self-powered by a car battery or something like that. So we try and take a look at that as part of our emergency communications plan. And just to briefly talk about the State Interoperability Executive Council, I didn't provide any handouts on it. Frankly, I could drown you in a ton of paper, and I don't want to at this point until we have a little bit farther down the road. But this group was formed by executive order by the governor a little over a year ago, and it's really charged with taking a look at our system of communications in the state, primarily in the public safety community, and to see, number one, the obvious things that we've learned from September 11th, that basic public safety entities can talk between them. That's one of the first strategies. Of course, you know, the great pictures and stories of the police and the fire officer in New York on standing on the side of the walls and can't talk to each other. So that was one of the base premises, to look at that, and then to try, and also in our strategy in this executive council, to look at what Oregon really does have in every community, every county, every 911 center, and other types of organizations that may have some sort of communications infrastructure, and probably knowing up front that we will never have enough money to buy a whole new system, if you will, but how we can take advantage of strategically placed investments and newer technology that might be able to patch together, if you will, or make better use of the current systems that we have. And then also to identify those systems in the state that are just frankly too old and will not meet forthcoming Federal Communications Commission rules here in about the next 8 years. You'll see a lot of rules affecting spectrum management and the use of the public safety spectrum that will force jurisdictions across the country to relook at what type of equipment they purchased and how they're using it, because in a lot of cases some of that equipment is no longer being manufactured by the industry, and they will have to address those issues. So that State Interoperability Executive Council meets on a monthly basis, and we just recently finished a fair portion inventory of what the state actually owns, what spectrum they use per each agency, and what are the common problems and what are the common needs. And I think to summarize that report, it gave us a good idea of what we own, and it gave us a good idea of what everybody out there really wants. And one of the key factors was that they need assistance in planning what type of system they need and how they can better serve their constituents, because the definition of the public safety community has expanded greatly since the terrorist attacks. And then with the recent tsunami disaster has elevated a lot of thought process in, you know, to how to focus more direct communications into certain portions of a state like Oregon, where the coastal communities have a threat that the non-coastal communities don't have. And so taking a look at that. And in addition to that council, there's a smaller group of that council that's specifically looking at the state's communication systems, primarily the Department of Transportation, State Police, Corrections, and Forestry. And again, on the same premise of how that we can manage those four systems and invest as a group instead of individual agencies that will support the state's future needs and those people that depend upon that system, and hopefully use that as at least a solid backbone to provide communities any assistance that they may need in their public safety arena. Since most of the state's backbone is established, they have towers and facilities on mountaintops and key locations, you know, that we can improve upon that to serve everybody. So with that, I will finish and take any questions that you may have.
Members of the committee, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The State Interoperability Executive Council, the report that recently completed on the inventory, any idea, does that report include any idea on what kind of cost we might be looking at to try and upgrade the state's system?
It doesn't address the cost of the state system. Chair Dallin, Representative Burley, we tried to separate it out as we have the state radio system managed by state agencies, and then we have all the radio systems that are managed by some entity in all the jurisdictions. We, and I would tell you, Representative, it was not scientific when we first started, but we estimated that if we were to do some serious initial upgrades to the entire state, that it would be well over $225 million. And obviously it was clear to us that we're not going to come up with that kind of money to deal with it. So we've stepped back, we've taken a look and studying the inventory now and looking at what technology is out there that could put together some of the systems that we have that would serve us well into the future without buying brand new systems. And the other complicating factor to that is that we found through this study and just general knowledge of working with public safety entities across the state that most everybody is in some phase of upgrading or redoing their entire system. And so you have a mesh of different people and groups at different levels of preparedness in their communication system. Some are old and they're replacing them totally. Some are buying pieces to improve their system. And so we're trying to take a look at how we can effectively assist and help manage, you know, to try and bring everybody up to at least a certain level of communications capability.
I've got a few, if I may.
Certainly follow up, Representative Burley.
On your handout, Ken, item number one talks about the FEMA national radio system, and it gives Oregon the ability to have the HF voice capabilities. Have we been able to implement that across the state, or do we have some areas that are not covered?
Chair Dallin, Representative Burley, yes, we've had that for many years. That was established many years ago when the Federal Emergency Management Agency was a standalone agency and is still maintained by them as being part of the Department of Homeland Security. And I would add to that, since the Department of Homeland Security has been formed, we're seeing a fair amount of initiative starting to come in where they're working on establishing separate communication systems from the public switch. It's a slow process, as you can well imagine, but in one example, they have installed a system now where they've run a separate telephone line to every state that is no way connected to the normal public switch. So it's a totally different system, and they're slowly trying to move that down to where they hopefully will have that ability down to at least every county in the nation. But this has been about an 18-month project just to do from Homeland Security to the states. And I think as Homeland Security matures, we'll see more of those initiatives, you know, realizing that the disaster, whatever it may be, starts at the local level, and we've got to make sure that there's, you know, good interoperability and redundant communication systems down to the lowest level possible.
The Oregon Emergency Services on your handout says that it covers most of the Willamette Valley and Northern Oregon Coastal Area Emergency Operations Centers. Why is that limited in that geographic scope?
Chair Dallin, Representative Burley, right now the only limitation there is just money and trying to expand the system as wisely as we can with our resources.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, certainly. Representative Redlin, you had a question.
Thank you, Chair. A few, if I can, as well. Have we, as a state, working with counties and local municipalities, have we come up with the protocols that would say this is the kind of systems that we all need, or we can, so that we can be interoperable? And have we ever, along that same line, had a pool so that we can buy equipment and say, here it is, as schools do statewide, there's a pool of textbooks or whatever that are acceptable, that everybody knows works together, and we can buy those at a cheaper cost because it's pooled. So have we done anything along that line with the state in emergency equipment?
Chair Dallin, Representing Roblin, we have done some limited work, and we have offered, at least through the Homeland Security grant program, you know, that the offer for the state purchasing system, which has the ability to, you know, buy in bulk, if you will, and provide a better resource for the cities and counties, and we've done that to try and help them in their process. As far as recommended equipment and recommended things like that in the emergency services world, on the COMO equipment, the State Interoperability Executive Council and its technical expertise, those that have it, have tried to set out a list of standards for equipment that has gone out to every jurisdiction in Oregon as to what it is, and we have not mandated that they purchase certain things, but we've given them, you know, a shopping list, if you will, of those things that meet and will meet federal communication standards, you know, into the future, and allow them from to go from that list of what they need to purchase.
We've done a lot of scenarios around the state of different catastrophic events, and then we've practiced different things. Have we had an analysis of, you know, like the tsunami, a 9-plus earthquake off the coast, and what effects it would have on each of these systems, and what systems might be left over that could still provide information and data after such an event?
Chair Dallin, Representative Roblin, no, we have not. We have tested some of these systems. We test them quite often just as a routine to make sure that they're operational. But we've used some of the systems during some of our exercises at the state and when we work with counties. And we've made our best attempt to make an educated guess of how these systems may be affected. I find it sometimes challenging, you know, you never know how some of this affects. If you have a large earthquake, you know, one of the things that's really difficult to realize, too, is, you know, that could affect one of the tower sites on a mountain that could be key. And, you know, we've talked about that. We've never really actually planned how you would address those issues, considering how many of them are out there and actually how difficult some of them are to get to, depending on the time of the year. But to answer your question directly, we have not tried to really analyze, you know, if we really had something very bad happen, you know, how each one of these could be affected and may not be usable at all.
The last one on this one, on that same sense, you know, I'm looking it over and having not thought about this like you obviously have, you know, the amateur radio system is probably, in looking at it from our perspective, they can communicate directly with police because they have those systems in place as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're generally mobile, not all of them. Some of them are stationary at home. But do you do the annual events with them? Is it basically to figure out protocols and how to address things and how to get a hold of people? What all do they do in those kinds of a
Chair Gallum, Representative Roblin, it's that and really a lot more. We try and work them into different scenarios, and we try and shut part of them down so they can't operate to see if they can figure out a way to reroute their traffic through different amateur radio areas. And the primary testing is, of course, to see that everybody is participating, they know the emergency procedures, and we try to establish certain protocols with them and teach them, you know, what they can do for us and how they fit into the emergency service system. But we try and throw as many spins into it to wreck their system to see if they can come up with the solutions on how to do it. In fact, just recently we did some testing and an exercise and working with the fishing fleet as another opportunity for a communications event because of tsunamis, and using them as a communications platform if a tsunami happened on the Oregon coast. And so we continually try to test it as much as we can.
Certainly.
Since you brought the ocean part, you know, we have the buoys, and there's been information lately about the buoy system not all working. Does that information come constantly in telling what's happening, and then there has to be someone to analyze that, or is that a function of the federal government and then to you?
Chair Dallin, Representative Roblin, we get that information constantly. We are set up on the seismic and tsunami alert network that's run out of Alaska and Hawaii. And we leave the scientific analysis really to the geology and mineral industry people, the science part of it. But they have full-time people in each one of these stations that read this information, and that is sent to us via the computer, and then also on the National Alert and Warning System, we get daily updates on that. And that also is hooked to the buoys, and that is also hooked to underground seismic system, because the buoys only take care of things way out in the ocean. And we have seismic systems that are closer in that are the ones that we watch very carefully. And then the National Weather Service and the National Oceanic and Administration provide the real science, and they provide the actual determination if it's a watch or a warning or if there is an actual tsunami that we have to worry about.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Director Murphy. I'm going to go to the other end of the spectrum, out to the other side of the Cascades. To us, I think we have to have a definition of disaster and emergency. Providing basic emergency, a car wreck on a gravel road, a horse and rider incident in the middle of nowhere, we cannot communicate back and forth. And we have the same problems that you do, money, logistics. Do you have, and I would also say that Gillum, Wheeler, Sherman, Wasco, Grant counties would be most interested in doing anything they can to promote your system. Do you have some kind of a cookbook or a recipe on things that local counties can do to put themselves in a better position for emergencies, small, and disasters large?
Chair Dallum, yes, the State Interoperability Executive Council has been working about the last 6 months, and we just published, a planning guide. One of the things that I mentioned from the inventory that we've done is most all the jurisdictions exclusively across the state really said, you know, that we need assistance in planning and making us think about all of those things that really make up a compromise of an entire system. And looking through the state and then my knowledge of some of the different jurisdictions, they're no different really than how things have happened here at state government. A lot of police departments have their own system, fire department has their own system, public works has their own system. And so we put out some planning guidance, which I can provide the committee, you know, to help them, number one, what it is that they need to think about, who should be on the system, what they should have, and it's really set up to make them think about communications for anything. You know, literally, if, you know, any type of emergency, a car wreck, those kind of things, and what they can do to improve their system and at least force them into the planning aspects of it, you know, and what they should be thinking about it. And then that is also one of the key factors of the current Homeland Security Grant Program, is trying to encourage each jurisdiction to apply for that money to help them in plan for their system and then what it is that they really need to do, you know, to improve the entire system in their jurisdiction.
Homeland Security grants, you have the application process for that also?
Yes, Chair Dallin. That recently went out in January. So far it's an annual event where we have the grants go out. They normally come out in the December or January time frame. And right now, the current grant requirements, we send, or the grant packages, we place on numerous web pages, and we send out about 1,400 packets to jurisdictions across the state for them to apply. And March 3rd of this year is the application deadline. And there's numerous things that allow them to apply for different monies that would support not only the purchase of communications devices, but plans as well. And this year specifically in our guidance, we strongly encourage them to apply for planning money.
Thank you very much. Are there any? Yes, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, I was just wondering, with regards to enhanced 911, I know that you've been working on some projects during the interim and since last session, I think, with regards to the 911 system, and particularly in our more remote counties. How has that been coming along and using, and I think that there was some thought about using some of the funds that are generally collected off of the telephone bills that go to 911 for further trying to create a more the interoperability between capabilities for all within the state, but for all of our different users of the system in 911. Can you tell us that? And if you address that while I was out of the room, I apologize for that. But can you kind of give us an update on that?
Chair Dallin, Representative Crummell. We have slowly been working to put into place the enhanced 911 system, and probably the majority of that effort is to deal with the cell phone issue of location technology. It has been a challenge primarily because of the service providers trying to come up with a solution that would make them the most money. But the reality that we deal with, and we've got a majority of the Willamette Valley, Southern Oregon done, and we're slowly moving out eastward. It's a matter of working with the vendors that provide cell phones and coming up with solutions and how they want the GPS chip in the cell phones. The other part of those monies are dedicated to making a much more improved geospatial database that literally drills down deeper into a county or a city to provide more information, especially outside of a city area. You know, when you get into the more rural counties, you know, being able to map out all the different locations, you know, where you have roads and facilities that may not necessarily be in a city. We've also, some of that money has gone towards enhancing the ability and the interoperability of the 911 center to make sure that they have no conflicts with any public safety agency, you know, where they have that assurance that, you know, when they contact them, they're able to, you know, be able to talk without going through some long, tedious effort of switching from channels to channels or trying to go through a, you know, some routing system to get to them. And so slowly those interoperability issues are being addressed and trying to also adjust to the different city and county agencies as they purchase new radio systems and making sure that the 911 centers are compatible. And coming quickly on the horizon, as I mentioned a little bit, is the voice over internet protocol. That clearly can affect the 911 centers and communications. Frankly, one of the issues with 911 centers and the telephone system, it's aging, it's old, and the public safety spectrum and the issues that they deal with. And so my staff that deals with the 911 issues have been dealing here in about the last year, working with vendors and the Federal Communications Commission, you know, about what is the future of the voice over the internet protocol, because it is much cheaper. We would save a great deal of money by using it, but there's lots of issues when it actually comes to locating somebody when you make a call over that system. So and also the 911 centers are eligible to apply for Homeland Security money also, you know, to help them, you know, in the communications area primarily what they would be eligible for.
May I follow up, Mr.
Chairman? Certainly, follow up.
Ken, you made the comment, you made reference to software and hardware and some of the, you know, some of the challenges that we face. And I'm just curious as to whether or not we have explored whether the possibility of a commercial off-the-shelf product that may already be available. And I mention that because in terms of particularly the communications of, you know, a citizen calling 911 to request assistance. And the reason why and how difficult that would be, and the reason why I bring that up, I happen to have OnStar on my car. A few weeks ago, I was at a dinner out at a place across the road from the airport. And my tire was flat, and it was not a situation of my tire being flat just on the bottom. It was flat all the way around. And I know this because I tried to drive on it, and it didn't work. It was flat all the way around. And I have roadside assistance. And so being the lazy person that I am, I called roadside assistance instead of getting out there in my suit and changing the tire myself. But I called OnStar to have someone, roadside assistance, come out, and of course, and they said, well, and Mr. Krimmel, you are at 2336 Turner Road Southeast in Salem, Oregon. Is that correct? So evidently pinpointing me wasn't a problem, because they knew exactly where I was at. And I understand the GIS chip in the cell phones and, you know, and that sort of thing. But what I'm wondering is that for some of this stuff, could we buy an OnStar system for the state? I mean, could we, would GM sell us an OnStar system? I bet for enough money they would. That we could put into play so that if you're, you know, at the top of the Steens Mountains and provided you can get any kind of a signal that you could call, you know, Oregon OnStar, and they'd send somebody out to, you know, save you from the crevasse that you've just managed to fall into, or the horse that you've managed to hit out in Wasco County, or something like that, or, you know.
Yeah, Chair Dowling, Representative Krimmel, believe me, we look at the technology all the time, and we're never short of any of them trying to display it for us either.
I'm sure.
And I will tell you, and I'm sure you're well aware, I mean, there's some wonderful technology out there, but it is wonderfully expensive. And things like OnStar, there's many different ones. I was at a demonstration here recently that had radio frequency identification system. It's a little chip about the size of a piece of grain that you can put on your person, your car, and they can identify exactly who you are and where you're at. And that technology's out there, and I think it has applicability, but I think it becomes expensive depending on how far and how deep you spread it. The cell phone companies, you know, and I'm surely not a technical expert here, but the GPS chip, I think, was the most economical way that they could go. But the downfall to that is that you don't have cell phone coverage every square inch of the state. And I don't know about OnStar. I would be curious to know if you were in the middle of Grant County in a canyon, if OnStar would work. And those are some of the challenges on those systems, because we have tested a few of them, and they don't work in certain areas. So, but we constantly look for those technology improvements, but it really is, it's a question of money and how far do you use it and how deep do you go, you know, within a jurisdiction, you know, will depend on the cost.
I can tell you, Mr. Chair, that because I, in association with the OnStar, is also a phone in my vehicle, and I can tell you that when my cell phone couldn't reach a party one time on my way to Bandon between Drain and
Reedsport,
when my cell phone couldn't get a signal, I punched that phone, and I was able to call the party that I was going to visit and able to communicate. And they heard me loud and clear, and I heard them loud and clear, and it was a perfect signal.
Chair,
it was almost as if I was on a landline or standing next to them, which is really scary.
Chair Dallin, Representative Cromwell, and I think the key there is, you know, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure OnStar is managed by a satellite system.
Yes.
And I would be scared to guess the cost of that, but you know, that is probably one of the better systems if you were to purchase something. And we've actually talked about it at the State Interoperability Executive Council. I suspect we were talking about it more jokingly than we were seriously, but considering some of the cost factors that you may find in any other type of technology and the coverage issues, you know, a satellite is a pretty hard bargain to argue with, because it does have better coverage than any cell phone system or any tower-based system. We find that every time, in fact, that's one of the first things when we look at technology vendors. We always are curious why they pick a certain part of the state to demonstrate their technology, and we always move them to another part of the state to see if their technology works. And a good example, we've set up a Wi-Fi system over in Eastern Oregon to deal with the chemical stockpile program. It works perfectly, but it's 600 square miles of flat country. We brought them down to the Willamette Valley, and it failed in a minute because of the geography. So, it's really, it's important that when we talk to the vendors, you know, to really take a look at Oregon's geography, which is real key to just about any communications issue, and see, you know, how they address not only mountains, but valleys and gullies and things like that where people may be stuck.
Mr. Chair, I would just point out, and I understand the challenges that Ken is talking about. During the last legislative session, one of the things that we had talked about, and I think probably the council is trying to address, is sort of a goal of for emergency services of eventually being able to be, you know, coast to coast and border to border and corner to corner, having coverage across the state, so no matter whether you pick up your landline, your cell phone, or a satellite phone, you can call a 911 system and get the assistance that you need, and they, of course, being able to track you and know where you are. And I know even then, one of the issues that Ken was addressing and the council was addressing was the issue particularly around cell phones and the ability of to have the technology within the phone to be able to pinpoint where a person is, other than the person just, you know, stating on the phone. And I've used my cell phone in an emergency situation in downtown Portland before also, mm-hmm. and over by the convention center. And it was a matter of having to tell the person where I was at. And I don't know about the dispatcher. I was a little concerned because she didn't seem to have a clue as to where I was talking about. So I don't think I got New York, but I'm not sure. But she didn't seem to really understand where I was doing. When I said the convention center, it's like it was a blank page in her database or whatever. So I was a little concerned about that. But I do know that this is something that they've been addressing, and I really wanted to give Ken the opportunity to make some comments about the 911 system, because it's something that we do need to, I think, continue to work on. I would be real curious and interested to see what the cost would be for, if a vendor had an OnStar type of system that they wanted, that they were willing to use in the state or allow to be used in the state. It'd be real interesting to see what the cost would be on a per person basis and total cost would be and that sort of thing. And it may be really ineffective until the cell phone companies go to more of a satellite phone mm-hmm. type of system, which quite frankly I think is going to be here a lot sooner than we all think it will be.
At Chair Dallum, Representative Cromwell, I would add to that comment that location technology is difficult because cell phone towers are not accurate, and different cell phone companies use the same tower, and it becomes very difficult. And this is not 100% accurate, but close. Right now, 40% of Oregon's calls to 911 centers are by cell phones, and not everybody knows where they're physically standing or driving. And I've even been in this situation, you know, where you're driving down a freeway and you know you're on that freeway, but you don't really know what milepost or what exit or anything, and the technology is not there quite yet that can accurately pinpoint you within a couple meters of where that cell phone is setting. So there's some technology things there too that we need to take a look at. And I can also, I do have some figures, not necessarily OnStar, but I can provide you some satellite figures, that give some base ideas, you know, the cost of how to put that in. And satellite phones are, they're very usable right now, but they're pretty expensive. And hopefully that technology, I think we'll see more of it come into play with satellites, and I'm sure those prices will come down.
Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Chair. Speaking of satellite and satellite radio technology, because there is a lot of that out there now, do we have any... Is the Federal Emergency Management Agency radio program tied into the satellite at all yet? I mean, do we have any way in which, I keep thinking about towers going down and all of that, and so in emergency, satellite still works, if you have a satellite radio, and if you have power or batteries. Mm-hmm. So are we using the satellite radio system at all in any of our emergency stuff?
Chair Dallum, Representative Roblin, I don't know the correct answer. I'll find out for you, but I don't think any of these systems other than the normal satellite phones are using any type of satellite assistance like satellite radio or things like that. I'm just not smart enough to know. I'll have to ask and get you an answer, but I don't think they are.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. Are there any other questions? We appreciate very much your coming. I guess what we want is a cheap, quick total coverage system, and you to report that regardless of where you are in Oregon, you can find us and come and help.
That's what we're working on, Chair. That's what we want to.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ken, for your time and your report. Are there any other questions?
No, sir.
Any other concerns? If not, we'll stand adjourned.